Michael will be recording. Whatever
yeah.
the YouTube thing. Right, of course. Of course. So, Tyron, we're good? All right, great. So, thank you, everyone, for coming to this meeting. I'd like to call to order the October 3rd meeting of the Health, Human Services, and Housing Committee. I will start with entertaining before I get into the agenda and we get into the minutes, I just want to say I had a miscommunication with Michael. I'm owning it. I told Tara that we could have LaSalle School, which has a program that we've been doing with the county for a while, present to the committee at the beginning of the meeting. It didn't end up on the agenda, which is just a clerical error that I introduced. So we're still going to let them present because they're here, and I'm excited to hear from them, excited for everyone to hear from them. So my apologies for that. And then we're going to take a couple of, then we'll do the approval of the minutes. We'll take a couple of items out of order to a few department heads that are here for just one resolution that are at the end of the agenda. So we're going to knock those out. Then we'll get to the regular business. So I appreciate everyone bearing with me on this. I would like to start by entertaining a motion to approve the minutes before we get to the presentation. Moved by Legislator McCullough. Seconded by Legislator Harmon. Any discussion on the October 15th minutes? All right. All those in favor of approving the October 15th minutes?
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. So now I would like to welcome the director of the LaSalle Schools. Do you want to bring him in here? How are you? Those are all free. Yep.
Cool. So, Chair, you should tell. Thank you so much for allowing for us to be able to do this very brief presentation.
Yep.
It's connected to Resolution 517, so we thought it would be timely.
Great. And we have, do we have 517 on for tonight?
We do.
Excellent. All right. Great. With that, I'd like to introduce you to the committee. You can have a few minutes to share a little bit of background on LaSalle School and the program that we'll be reviewing in a moment.
Absolutely. Thank you, everyone. Good evening. My name is David Wallace. I'm the executive director at LaSalle School. I've served there in a variety of capacities. I'm coming up on my 20-year anniversary. I started in December of 2004. I began there as a social worker responsible for specialized mental health and clinical programs. Over the years, I've picked up more responsibilities. I suffer from the inability to say no, and about 6 years ago, I became executive director, and really enjoyed working there. My relationship with Commissioner McDonald goes back, I think, about 15 or so years.
Don't age me.
Where, you know, she was about 20 years old at the time. We worked together. She helped us lift off a newer program, Time, which is now our counseling center at LaSalle. I'll come back to that in a moment. But at LaSalle School, we're celebrating 170 years of continuous operation since 1854. We've been caring for children, providing residential foster care. We are a qualified residential treatment center where we serve about 34 adolescent males ages 12 to 21 from all over New York State. And we've had a really long and wonderful partnership serving Ulster County in that capacity. Our day service program is a fully accredited junior senior high school, grades 6 through 12. We even see some kids from Kingston being bused all the way up to Albany for that program as well. And so we've got some ties and some roots in working with kids and families from this region. More recently, and I mentioned working with Tara in her previous role, where we opened a mental health clinic that served our Capital District community, also serves as an aftercare option for kids when they discharge from residential. We built it adjacent to our school building on campus because we wanted our day service students, many of whom have, in addition to the special education and behavioral needs they have, they also have very severe and complex co-occurring psychiatric disorders. So we wanted to make sure that our outpatient clinic was not just for the community, but also for our kids. And wanted to make layers of services available for children and families to create seamless continuums of care. We cross-train our staff to work in a variety of levels of care. So a child could be discharged from our residential program today, go to our day school tomorrow, and move from one level of care, residential, to outpatient or day service, and potentially keep the same clinician. So we do all that work on the back end. It's not fun or not easy for our clinicians, but we try to make that as seamless and painless for kids and families. You can only imagine what it's like for a child to have to tell their story over and over and over again just because they're sleeping in a new place or they've started a new program and they're at a different level of care, which should be celebrated. That's a good thing, right? And they often feel like it's punishment because they have to start all over again. So we've been spending the last decade or so building out continuum of care, trying to get what we're good at on campus and push it into the community where kids and families are, which is the exciting project that we have here in Ulster. And one more thing about our campus, we're about a year and change into serving refugee unaccompanied minors on our campus, so kids coming direct from border who are in search of reunifying with family members that are already living here in the United States. And so for about a year and a half, we've been working with the federal government and Health and Human Services to provide services to that unique population as well. A little over a year ago, it's actually coming up to 2 years, we had an exciting opportunity to partner with Tara and her team and the Ulster County Mental Health and had this really crazy idea that we could serve kids and remove all those obstacles and all those barriers, diagnoses and insurance and admission criteria and the challenges of referrals. If any of you have children or know folks with children that have tried to get into mental health care, you know it's really hard right now. In fact, my own daughter is looking for a new counselor, and as long as I've been doing this and the fact that I'm a social worker and run a mental health facility, I'm having difficulty helping her find a new clinician. So I think the exciting thing about the project that we've developed together in Ulster County is the unique partnership, the unique funding, and the unique ability to be right in the school, right in the community, where the kids that need us the most can get access with relatively no barriers, which is honestly, in the 20 years that I've been doing this work, it's unheard of. And it's when we were conceptualizing this idea a couple of years ago, it sounded great. And it was the thing that we've been waiting for decades. And so the opportunity to partner was really, really exciting. In January, it'll be 2 years in January that we've been operational. I've got some stats I can share with you. We've had the opportunity across each of your middle schools to serve up to 100 children as the model. So there's one social worker and one case manager assigned to each of the districts. Kingston gets two of those dyads, given the numbers and population there. But since we opened in January of 23, we've served just shy of 300 children, about 293 as of 5 minutes ago when Kayla Molloy, our director, ran that quick report for me. Currently, we're serving 93 enrolled children, 6 on the wait list. We're hoping to clear that wait list. As of yesterday, we onboarded 2 additional staff, making that team honestly the only fully staffed team that we have at LaSalle. If any of you are employers, you know that it continues to be a really, really difficult recruiting environment. Personally, I feel like it's harder now than it was even during the height and the challenges of COVID. And so I'm really thrilled, really excited that this team is not just fully staffed, but we even have one intern. So we're plus one. We've got a surplus position of staff, which is really, really unique and feels really good. And the new clinician that we just hired actually moved here from Rochester specifically to join this team because of how innovative and how exciting and how novel the project is. People are relocating to work on this team. That's unique. That doesn't happen often in child welfare and juvenile justice, not in my experience anyhow. A few more stats. So 98% of our youth caregivers are directly involved in program services. In August, we've had 112 visits with kids and families that are enrolled. None of them occurred in schools this month for August, because it was August, right? But we've also, I think, found that while the initial concept was this project to be co-located in the schools, and there is a lot happening in the schools, I think our kids and families have found that the community-based aspect and the flexible nature of this project and our staff can be in the community, in the homes, being where the kids are. I don't need to tell any of you how mountainous and how tough the terrain can be around here. When we visited one of your school districts, they shared with me that some of their kids stop coming to school when it starts to snow. They just can't get there. And so our team are getting to where the kids are at, which I think is another unique aspect of this project and unlike any other that are required to stay in the office, stay on campus, generate the billable in a traditional psychotherapy setting. This removes all of those obstacles and barriers, and so I think we've seen really high engagement as a result. 3 youth discharged in August, 80% of them accomplished half or more of their goals. I could go on with a few more numbers, but I think really some of the magic and some of the success that I see in this program is the excitement on the team. It's hard work to be in child welfare and juvenile justice. It's often thankless. It's difficult. I think we're seeing the gratitude of families, the engagement of kids, the thanks from school districts. They've asked us recently if we could expand slots, create more opportunity for kids, move out of the middle school and into the high school and down into the elementary school. Could we add psychiatry as a component to this project? And so I'm seeing those requests as signs that this is having a positive impact, not just on the kids and families, but on your schools. And they're seeing the benefit and the value. And, you know, I have to admit, I think some of them were a little reticent at first. They weren't quite sure how our staff were going to work and partner with their staff and their social work team and their psychologists and their faculty. But I think they've all really come to see the value. I've also heard some secondhand and anecdotally some stories from kids. I've not yet had the opportunity to meet any of them personally. But these are kids that are not well engaged in school. They're not well connected with friends. They have limited social skills. They have limited social emotional skills. They're sometimes fearful about engaging in group settings and social settings. And I think we had some huge success over the summer doing really, really interesting things because there's no home base. There's no office for this program. And that means the team and the kids have to utilize and engage community resources like going to the mall, going hiking, going to the library, going to parks. They were at one of the local malls and they were handing out flowers to strangers as they were walking by and getting, you know, really odd looks, but, you know, just really teaching them ways to enjoy their community, spend time together, develop some meaningful relationships. And let me back up, and I told you LaSalle's been around for 170 years, but at our core, we believe that relationships, genuine, meaningful, caring, unconditional relationships between adults and children are the pathway to success. And one of the challenges I thought we would have, in addition to staffing and not having an office, I really wondered and worried how we would get that LaSallian value of caring and relationship to translate to a staff and to a team that's operating an hour, hour and a half away. I'm pleased to say that they're doing a great job, and they're truly demonstrating what it means to be LaSallians by putting the relationship with kids and families and community first, and the relationship that they've developed with one another, despite the fact that they're spread out across the county. They find ways to come together, and they find ways to bring the kids together. It's been really exciting and wonderful to watch. I know I've got a short amount of time. I promised I'd try to stay under 5 minutes, and I don't know how I did. But why don't I pause there, take a breath, and I'd be happy to answer and field any questions.
Any general questions? And I am going to bring their resolution to the top of the agenda also, so it'll be the next one that we do, the first one that we do. So he'll be here for that. Does anyone have any questions about the program, Brett LaSalle?
I just have one comment. Sure, so I was chair of the ARPA committee when this was called. Just that's interesting conversation. So I'm so happy to see it come this far. So thank you for all your work.
Thank you. Appreciate that. We're excited.
Great.
All right. Well, then, if there aren't any further questions, I'm going to go ahead and call out the resolution here. And I'll tap Commissioner McDonald to add anything, and then we'll discuss it from there. So we're going to go right into business. We're going to start with Resolution 517, which is a little midway down our agenda, but we're taking a few things out of order tonight. Resolution 517, approving the execution of a contract for $1,018,411 entered into by the county with LaSalle School for the Department of Mental Health. And Commissioner McDonald, is there anything that you would like to add or to frame the?
Nothing really. I think that David was really able to give you guys a picture of how the program has been performing. But I would ask that Kaziah Pierce, our LD program supervisor who supervises our child score, if there's anything else that you want to add in terms of what it's meant to our system of care as a whole.
Sure. I'm certainly not going to be as eloquent as Dave in this presentation, but I can share that in working very closely in the implementation of this program, working very closely with the schools, we've received incredible feedback from the districts of how helpful this has been for them. And the ability to connect youth to a program that doesn't require all of the diagnoses, insurance, the different things that, you know, are necessary but end up being a barrier oftentimes. And when youth are coming in, they're maybe not diagnosed yet. They might have something going on, but when it's just budding, they don't have the diagnosis in order to connect them to the care. So having this program as an option for youth that are coming through our SPOA process and our child SPOA through the Department of Mental Health, and also for community members calling and asking for help for youth that they're aware of, that they're parents of. It's been really wonderful.
Thank you. All right, any questions on the resolution? Any discussion? All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 517. So moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, great. Thank you so much. We appreciate you being here. You don't have to stay for the entire commission to leave gracefully. You don't have to feel shy about that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here.
Really, yeah. Really
Thank you.
All right. So next we're going to take Resolution 553. So we just got these requests a few minutes ago to take these out of order. 553, adopting proposed law, local law number 9 of 2024, a local law providing real property tax exemption of the county portion of the real property taxation and special ad valorem levies for the creation of new accessory dwelling units in accordance with New York State Real Property Tax Law, Article 4, Title 2, Private Property, Section 421P2. And I believe this is Director Doyle. Take us a little bit of background.
Sure, thank you. Much appreciated for taking this out of order. The local law essentially provides for tax incentives for the construction of ADU units. I think you have a sheet in front of you that talks about how that works, where essentially it goes down from 100% in year zero, drops down by 25% increases, and then the final 2 years are 10% increases, and it finally sunsets after 6 years. The ADU process that has been sort of unleashed, I think, in many instances because of state funding and a recognition about how we can make our existing housing stock work harder, has seen a lot of the communities liberalize their ADU statutes. Some of the burdens with respect to ADUs are the fact that after you construct them, you're hit with a higher tax bill based on the value of that construction. What this tries to say is that we will give you the county portion of that tax bill back to you, and eventually as you rent it up and you get your individuals into that unit, your tax bill gradually increases. It is a bit of a burden on assessors, but it's not a significant burden on assessors. We're also seeing that this follows what the City of Kingston has done. The City of Kingston has adopted this statute as well. We would encourage other communities to consider it. I would add that ADUs today, in terms of what your average size for an ADU, are what average home sizes were in the 60s. So when you start to think about that, we're able to look at ADUs right now in terms of completions somewhere in the neighborhood of about $120,000 to $200,000. I would add that this law sunsets at $200,000, so you only get an exemption for $200,000 worth of the value added to the project, to a facility. Does that answer everybody's questions, I hope?
Well, let's see if there are questions first. Does anyone have any questions? Yep, Legislator Corcoran.
Do we know if year zero is actually 2025, or would it be the first year since, in my example, Marlboro doesn't have an ADU right now, which is being written?
So the short answer would be is it's only for new construction ADUs.
Right.
So that's the first thing. And it would be, are you thinking about the tax year? Is that what you're thinking?
Tax year, because if Marlboro puts the resolution forward this year in 2025, our first year zero, would be 2026.
That would be, as I understand the statute, I'm not an attorney, as I understand the statute, it would affect the tax year when you are going to raise that assessment based on the new construction. That's as I understand it.
Okay.
Any other questions? I just want to ask, because it came up when we were debating the setting the public hearing, and it came up on the floor, not in this committee, so I want to give you a chance to respond to it. There were some concerns around the long-term affordability of the units. Can you speak to that?
Sure. We had a substantial debate internally with staff about whether or not we could add, as you'll notice, the statute as written basically precludes the use of an ADU for short-term rentals, so you can't use it for a short-term rental. we had a long discussion internally as to whether or not we should put an affordability provision associated with that. Part of the reason we didn't, we decided not to put that in the local law was the fact that this is an assessor's responsibility in terms of how it's taxed. And the idea of thinking about how an assessor would essentially decide and monitor whether a unit was affordable and all of that reporting that would go with it sort of created a different type of burden on the assessor. In addition, sometimes affordability is controlled at the local level by zoning statutes, and that presents, from the zoning statute, presents the burden on the code enforcement officer, not on the assessor. So we're working with communities as they amend their ADU statutes to indicate that new ADUs probably should have an affordability component associated with them. That affordability component can be permanent, or that affordability component can be over a period of time. We sort of left that affordability component to the local government as it relates to the zoning statute.
Okay. Legislator Collins.
How do we expect to enforce the no STR rule?
The no STR rule is enforceable because of the county's registration process. The county has a registration process for STRs. We also do granicus work associated with that. So the assessor can query us, and we would have the ability to tell them whether or not we thought the project was being used for an STR or not.
Yep, Legislator Collins.
I'm just going to say that we currently have, I think it's 900 unregistered STRs that we know about in the county that we've done nothing about. So I think that's a concern. I mean, we can tell from Granicus that we have 900 non-registered STRs that have not been defined, have not been, yeah, nothing done in the county. So that's another issue. That's an issue to me. I understand that we have plans and desires to correct that, but we have to make sure we do correct that, because I don't want this tax this tax exemption to go to something that becomes an STR, but we don't realize it's an STR for 2 or 3 or 4 years, and they've gotten a huge break on the taxes and made a ton of money doing STRs.
Before I go to the Legislator Kitchen, although is it directly related to this question, Eric?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then go ahead.
I was just going to comment on what Legislator Collins says. Through my experience in working with different towns in the building departments, different building departments, I've come across certain towns don't even have a penalty or any kind of laws against STRs, and they haven't developed any against illegal STRs because they don't have an STR law. In Kingston, police is its own. We have a gentleman that works in City Hall. He polices Granicus. There's high penalties that go out for running an illegal STR. But it seems like this situation should be more of a county policing going on for the communities that don't have, the resources. There's a shortage of building department officials right now to even go after and pursue these things, which I have had the experience of being involved with. That's an issue. Just the personnel aren't there to enforce it on the town's level. And this is maybe something that we should look at the county level to enforce.
Yeah, I'll just mention, I think that this is a perfect, this issue, which we have brought to the county executive's team repeatedly, is an issue that it sounds like is going to be best dealt through the budget, because we don't have the staff to do it. That's what we're hearing. And so I think this is something that we should address through the budget, which regardless of the 421P exemption, we already have, we want to address it either way. So that's my feeling about it. Legislator Collins.
I'll be clear, I support this resolution, but I also want to make sure that we cover the holes.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. I think it brings a brighter light on an issue that we already want to solve. Yep. Yep. Director.
I just want to say that the county planning department reviews zoning statutes on a regular basis with its board. And the number one recommendation that we have when we review amendments to zoning statutes, particularly as they relate to ADUs, is one is that you need to have with respect to short-term rentals, you need to have a registration requirement. And you need to essentially make sure that registration requirement also shows that registration comes back to the county, that you now have a license as short-term rental. I'd also offer that what we did with respect to the Granicus contract, Granicus offers this service to municipalities that they will actually go out and do all the necessary mailings associated with that. We've extended the ability to do that from our Granicus contract to the municipalities themselves. So if they don't have the wherewithal to essentially do the necessary enforcement on short-term rentals, there is a third party that will do that for them that actually the county is using, and because we are using them, there's a break if municipalities do that. My understanding, I believe, that Woodstock has, which has a substantial number of STRs, has engaged Granicus to do that as well. There are a number of other providers, by the way, that also do this work.
Any other questions? Any discussion? All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt resolution. Which one are we on? 553. Resolution 553. I'll entertain a motion to adopt resolution 553. Moved by Legislator Harmon, seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor? Any opposed? All right, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, next on the agenda, another one out of order, resolution 525, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a contract with the New York State Department of Health to continue the tobacco enforcement program through the Department of Health. And Acting Commissioner Rosen, do you want to frame the program?
You don't mind if I turn over to Tom?
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Hello, everyone. This is a continuation, a five-year grant from the state. It's a continuation of a prior grant from the state. It funds the tobacco enforcement program, which includes reimbursement and offsets to personnel associated with the compliance checks, education, and offsets enforcement costs. It is $67,650 a year, and as I said, it is a five-year grant.
Any questions from the committee? Any points of discussion? All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 525. Moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Vice Chair Lopez. All those in favor? Any opposed? All right. And the last one that's out of order is 522, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement for the Preschool Special Education and Related Services Program with the Saugerties Central School District and the Department of Social Services. And Commissioner Iacocci, do you want to give us a brief overview?
Sure. This is a routine contract that we enter into for our preschool services. It's for the population of 3 to 5 year olds who have diagnosis around speech or physical therapy needs. And when we have the opportunity to enter into agreements with school districts that offer these services to do that. This population of children is not yet the responsibility of those school districts because they haven't began their formal education, but it's often a good opportunity for those school districts to become familiar with the 3 to 5 year old population that might ultimately enroll and begin kindergarten at those locations.
Any questions? Yep. Legislator Levine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Iacocci, this program is, can you just confirm that the location, is this at the Mount Marion School that these services are being provided in, within the Saugerties Central School District?
I can confirm that for you after I confirm it for myself. I think that it might end up being at more than Mount Marion
okay.
at this point, but it is within the Saugerty School District elementary school system.
Thank you. Yeah, if that information could be provided to the committee and to the legislature as all, that'd be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Any other questions? Any discussion? All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 522. Moved by Legislator McCullough. Seconded by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Great. So now we're going to jump right back into the resolutions in order. Resolution 509, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a lease agreement with the Children's Home of Poughkeepsie for space at 368 Broadway, City of Kingston, through the Department of Public Works, through Buildings and Grounds. I believe, Jolene, are you giving us a little bit of background here? Yep.
Yeah, sure thing. So we've been working towards using ARPA funding, building out a children's clinic here in Ulster County. There will be two locations. One of the locations, we have found an appropriate suite to be licensed through the state on the third floor, 360 Broadway. That is the plan for the first location. We are beginning to work with the Human Research Institute to do a behavioral health needs assessment. So once that assessment is done after a 6-month period of time, they are going to help us identify the second location for the children's clinic. So ideally over the next 2 years, children's home will staff up and serve up to 225 to 250
viewers. Any questions? Yep, Legislator Collins.
For the second location, are there criteria around that? Is it to be not in the city of Kingston?
So the idea is to find a location that is not in the city. You know what? Okay. We know that we could start up in Kingston and that the sustainability would be there based on the population, but we do want to reach out to other areas, obviously, in the county. The behavioral health needs assessment will really tell us where that could be most supported, where transportation would be accessible, where the need is the most highest. And so Children's Home is agreeable to really work with us and, you know, us to dictate where that location would be based off that behavioral health needs assessment.
Any other questions? Any discussion? All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 509. Moved by Legislator Harmon.
Second.
Seconded by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 510, approving the execution of a contract for $345,397 engineered by the county with Access Supports for the Living through the Department of Mental Health. And Commissioner McDonald, if you want to give us a little bit of an overview. And can you speak also specifically when you do so on the expansion of the program over time?
Sure.
Yep.
Would I be able to speak on 510 and 511? And it's fine if we do them separately, but it'll make sense in terms of
okay, great. So this is for 510 and 511, yes. And it's just those two. Okay, so we won't block them, but we'll you can give us the overview for both, and then we'll address them both.
Okay, so 511 is the base team for Access Supports for Living Mobile Mental Health Team, and so it was launched using the age card. The mobile mental health team responds to individuals throughout the county that don't necessarily need to be in a crisis, but just need to speak to someone about their behavioral health challenges, or if they're feeling as if they could use some support but don't know how to navigate the system, which can be quite difficult. But the majority of the time, the team is responding to folks in the community that are having a behavioral health challenge. Just lost my train of thought. So I'll go to 510. So the 511 is the base team. It's the $896,000 that we get from the state. Because the team had been so successful in doing its work, the idea was that we went to as a county, we went to them and said, we'd like to see some expansion. We'd like for you to expand your hours. So currently their hours are 10 to 10, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and we got to those hours by utilizing county contribution that is found in Resolution 510. We've also added another team in New Paltz through 510, so that team has been up and running for about a year and a half, and it is spending most of its time in that corridor, that Gardner corridor, what was the other?
Marlboro,
right. So they're able to really focus on and provide that area of our county support. That's it.
Great. Thank you. Any questions? Yep, Legislator McCullough.
What were the hours before expansion?
The hours were different per day where they were. So Ellenville would be 10 to 6, and then Kingston would be 10 to 10. And then there's another team I'm missing that started Desire. Well, it doesn't matter. So we were able to spread it out to make sure that the team is available, regardless of where the location is coming from, 10 to 10, 7 days a week.
Thanks. Other questions? Any discussion? All right, then we'll start with the first resolution. I'd like to entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 510.
Uh-huh.
Moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Corcoran. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. I'd like to entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 511. Moved by Legislator Corcoran, seconded by Legislator Harmon. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. All right. Moving right along now, Resolution 512, approving execution of a contract for $685,000, $685,054 entered into by the county with Aster Services for Children and Families to the Department of Mental Health. And Commissioner McDonald, would you want to give us some brief framing?
Aster Services is our largest children's provider. They are our main children's clinic, and they get a little bit of money from this contract for their one line, but they're not really supported to run the clinic. Just as we support them with his case management services, they have a specialized home-based crisis intervention services that is used for hospital diversion for kids that are really at risk. But, you know, no one wants to see children inpatient if we can really avoid that. So that's been very successful. We got an expansion on that through the state, so we were able to bring on some more staff and help more kids. You know, case management, there's different level of case management. There's non-Medicaid care management, there's health home, but it's case management. Right. And then the warm line. Yeah.
Any questions from the committee?
So I forgot, family care support as well. They're a big family care support.
Excellent. Any questions? Any discussion on 512? Any discussion? If not, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 512.
Move.
Moved by Legislator Kitchen, second by Legislator Nocala. All those in favor?
Okay.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 513, approving the execution of a contract for $100,000 entered into by the county with Health Alliance Hospital, Mary's Avenue Campus through the Department of Mental Health. Commissioner McDonald, can you give us a brief
framing? So this is an annual contract that must be going into its 15th year when the county came out of the direct service business and we handed over our license for methadone. We had an agreement with Health Alliance to be able to continue to keep a methadone clinic here in the county, and the agreement was that we would support their operations with these dollars. That's what this is.
Great. Any questions on 513? Any discussion? Yep, Legislator Hewitt.
That's a 15-year contract.
It's roughly, it's over 10 years for sure. I would have to remember when the clinics closed down, but it's a long clinic. It's a long-term agreement, is my point.
So it was in place before Westchester Medical Center bought Health Alliance?
I believe so, yes.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yep, Legislator Collins.
Do we know how many patients can be served?
That's the exciting part. So over the past year, they received a grant from the state in order to be able to combine what is known as Bridgeback, which is their outpatient substance use clinic, and their methadone clinic. And they were able to co-locate them now, which means that they have the ability to share resources. So where we had wait lists for many, many years, we no longer have a wait list, and they are serving, I believe they're serving up to 300 people now, and they plan to expand up to 5.
All right. Any other questions or points of discussion?
I just want to.
Yep. Go ahead, Legislator Collins.
There's always been a lack of service in Foster County for methadone. I appreciate hearing that they've expanded.
Great.
Yeah.
All right, if there's no further commentary, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 513. It's moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Resolution 514, approving execution of a contract for $197,758 entered into by the county with Health Alliance Hospital Mary's Avenue Campus, again through the Department of Mental Health. Commissioner McDonald?
Yes. So these are state aid dollars that are meant to be able to provide a crisis intervention service through the emergency department at the hospital. So I'm sure you all know many folks may appear at the hospital in need of continuous evaluation, but not everyone is found to need inpatient services. For those that have a crisis and then are being discharged, these services are supposed to either provide linkages for them or provide the support following the discharge from the ED. It's supposed to make sure that they stay connected after their psychiatric crisis that brought them to the emergency room.
Yep, Chair Criswell.
What's going to be the relationship with this program once we get our crisis stabilization center up and running?
They could work sort of in a symbiotic sort of way in which someone is not deemed appropriate for inpatient, still in the crisis, and that linkage that they may be getting is to the stabilization center to further plan on how they can get, you know, back on track in a way in which they would feel.
Great. And yeah, I just wanted to make sure that those conversations were happening, thought about, and as soon as, you know, we're ready to go, that it's all sort of set.
Absolutely.
Great.
Beautiful. All right. Any other questions? Any discussion? All right. And then with that, I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 514. Moved by Legislator Harmon. Seconded by Legislator Collins. All those in favor? Any opposed? Resolution 515, approving the execution of a contract for $197,864,000 entered into by the county with Hudson Valley National Center for Veteran Reintegration with the Department of Mental Health. Commissioner McDonald.
Absolutely. So this is the Vet-to-Vet program. This is the third year that we have this program in the county. These are state aid dollars. They've been able to expand. They have a new location. They provide robust services throughout the county, and I'll let Jolene give you a little bit more information.
Yes, so I oversee Hudson Valley Vet-to-Vet contract, and they're a great provider. They just got a new home close to Saugerties. They are currently doing coffee hours in different areas of the county, Marlboro, Ellenville. They've been doing outreach so that they can try to get out to vets, not vets come to them. They've been really successful at those coffee hours, providing AA meetings, writing groups, clothes donations. They had a ribbon type cutting not too long ago. If you haven't seen the facility, I recommend you doing that. You know, they have a program where they also help people build kayaks, and then they go out and they have those kayaks. I'm sure you heard about that. So I've been working with Kevin and Gavin now. We meet on a regular basis to kind of look into possibilities of expanding their programs. They also won the CARES Up grant back in the beginning of the year, which helped to expand one of their programs, not this one, but also to assist people reintegrating from leaving service. And so they've been successful with that as well. They're a great organization. Anyone has any questions?
Yep. Legislative Kitchen, and then we're
going. What location is?
Yeah,
it's right on 9W.
It's right on 9W, like Lake Katrine. Like if you're going past the Quick Check on the right, you keep going towards Saugerties. They are on the left across from the apartment complex.
We can get the address.
Yeah.
We can get the address.
Just past Twin Maples.
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
Right north of Rizzo. Across the other side.
Other side.
Okay.
Great. Legislator McCullough, followed by Criswell.
It's not as much. I just want to say I appreciate that you go for people if they cannot come to you. I like
yeah.
That.
They make a really, really big effort, and they do hold space at Trudy Farber as well, where they really try to encourage people to come in. And even if they're struggling to get people motivated to come in, they go out every time. They just don't skip. I think that's really great.
Great. Legislator Criswell.
I've invited this organization to present at our November session meeting. So
that's
a lot more directly from
wonderful. Legislator Hewitt.
I heard about their successful kayak building program, and then I heard from some vets that they lost their location. Do they have a location?
They have a new location. They were moved a couple times, finding a new home, and they have officially found a home, which they've reassured us they will be in for, you know, years to come. So
thank you.
Yeah.
All right, any other questions? Great. Any discussion? Then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 515. All those in favor? Or sorry, who's going to make the motion? Jumping ahead here, Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Kitchen. Thank you.
Thank you.
All those in favor?
Okay.
Any opposed? Okay, great. I think this is the last of the mental health resolutions. So Resolution 516, approving the execution of a contract for $53,477 entered into by the county with the Institute for Family Health, the Department of Mental Health. Commissioner McDonald.
Absolutely. I'm going to ask Kazai if she can give us a brief update.
Sure. So I oversee the contracts for these state aid dollars. We refer to it as non-Medicaid care coordination. This is a service that is provided to individuals who have a serious mental illness and are not otherwise able to be enrolled in health home care management, which is the Medicaid-billed case management that's available. So this is kind of a catch-all program to capture those people that aren't able to enroll in that. And so they provide care coordination services for individuals, connecting them to treatment, you know, making sure that they're getting the benefits that they are eligible for, really personalized goals that they change depending on the person that's enrolling in a program. And we recently reallocated these dollars to ISH, and they're pretty new. I believe their contract wasn't executed until into the second quarter of the year, so we haven't seen a ton of data come out of the program yet, as far as, you know, last quarter's reports.
Thank you. Any questions? Legislator Harmon.
Thank you. I just really appreciate that Institute is broadly positioned throughout the county. So, good choice.
Okay. I'll just add on that note, they have discussed with us their implementation plan of how to receive more referrals, and I think they've been incredibly creative because of the connections they have to get referrals from sources that otherwise wouldn't have sent referrals to this program.
Any other questions? All right. Then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 516. Moved by Legislator Harmon, seconded by Legislator Corcoran. All those in favor? Any opposed? All right. We already did 517. So next we have a series of appointments. I would like to block these four appointments to handle them all together. Is everyone okay with that? I'm just asking very colloquially right now. Is everyone okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay, then I would entertain a motion to block Resolution 518, 519, 520, and 521, moved by Legislator Corcoran, seconded by Legislator Collins. On the act of blocking them, is there any discussion? All right, then I'm going to call the question on the act of blocking them together. All those in favor? Any opposed? All right, so now we have a block of these resolutions that are being, these members that are being appointed to the Community Service Board and the Community Service Board subcommittees. Is there any, from the executive team, is there any framing of this that you want to share?
Their applications are there.
Yep, everyone, the applications and resumes should all be part of the packet. Any questions, discussion on these appointments? All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt the block. All right, moved by Legislator Collins, seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Okay.
Any opposed? All right, great. So we did Resolution 522 already. We now get to Resolution 523, confirming the appointment of Eve Walter, PhD in Epidemiology, as Ulster County Public Health Director. This resolution has been amended to clarify the role and salary, I believe, before we get to adopting it, I will hand it over to the county executive team for however you would like to introduce our your appointment for the public health director.
Thank you. I think many of you know Dr. Walter, but thank you for coming today to introduce yourself. As has been shared, we went through a very extensive process over the past 5 months. To find the best candidate for the position. We're very excited, and I just want to share that throughout the interview process, a lot of the people who participated did share that they were really excited by the prospect of working with Dr. Walter, and I'll let her share her experience. I'll let you introduce yourself. And then after that, I also wanted to introduce Stephanie Turco, who is the chair and president of our Ulster County Board of Health, who's also part of the process, and give her an opportunity to speak about that. Can I come up here? So no one needs to turn their back. Screen. Here. Okay, sorry, yes. That's it, call us. Hi. It's really great. I was kind of thinking I'd be nervous about coming here, but it feels like coming home a little bit. I'm Eve Walter, for those of you who haven't met me yet. I'm going to just tell you a little bit about my background, and even those of you who work with me, I don't know if you really knew all of me when I was being part of the legislature, but so I want to share that as briefly as I can, but as thoroughly at the same time. I leave out any gaps, then please feel free to ask me questions.
I'm happy to answer them. So I'm an epidemiologist, and a lot of people don't know what an epidemiologist is. I think before COVID, nobody knew. They always thought it was like a skin doctor because they remembered the joke when they were a kid about your epidermis showing. Dermatologist, by the way. So, and then after COVID, I think probably half of them would know what an epidemiologist is. So I'll just start with kind of telling you how I was trained. And so an epidemiologist is trained to first understand the factors that lead to health conditions, what kinds of things in a person's life or genetically or environmentally that lead to a higher risk of having different health conditions. We also look at trends in populations of different health conditions. And this is an important part of it because, you know, the number of people who are hospitalized for diabetes or for other kinds of, you know, other kinds of experience, it kind of goes like this. That's how data works. But sometimes things go up, 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 and that is called an epidemic. And that's why we're called epidemiologists, because we are studying epidemics, trying to understand if something is actually unusually high so that there needs to be a heightened response. And then we also are trained to look at, like, what's the trajectory? What happens to people who have certain health conditions, you know, what happens next in their lives? And also tying in, how do social determinants of health, like how does housing insecurity and food insecurity and all those things impact it? I don't know if you've ever thought about it, but there's quite a few, you know, there's some antibiotics, there's insulin, there's things that require refrigeration. So if you have housing insecurity, where are people actually refrigerating these kinds of things? And so we kind of explore all those things. I also hold an appointment at Mount Sinai School of Medicine, and this really started when in my work at the Institute for Family Health, which you were all talking about. And so I was at the institute for many, many years. And what's really important about this is that that experience allowed me to combine and create bridges between healthcare and public health. And I don't know if everybody understands the difference of, like, what's public health. I even asked my husband last night because I was like, I don't want to make assumptions. I'm like, I am an epidemiologist, even married to me. I said, do you know what public health is? And he's like, honestly, no. And, I take it for granted. So there is a difference. They're completely different disciplines. They go to different schools. They have different training. So healthcare, medicine, doctor would be interested in the individual, right? So if someone comes to them, their tightness in their chest, they might assess, you know, their environmental conditions, identify maybe are they experiencing asthma, what kind of behavioral changes, what kind of medication, what kind of time should they come back and visit, how do we keep you out of the hospital? So that's what healthcare is an individual. Public health, we focus on populations, and we look at trends and experiences in populations. That could be the country. That's CDC, the head of public health for the country. So they might want to wonder if all of a sudden a high number of respiratory conditions are happening across the country or in parts of the country, is there a new virus we should be paying attention to? So that's on the country. In the state, might be a population. A municipality could be a population. So I did a whole bunch of work in the Bronx, doing things on preventing and reducing chronic disease illness through walkways, like green parks and places that people can go outside and breastfeeding cafes. But it also could be a smaller population, like the jail. Like if all of a sudden people were having respiratory conditions in the jail that was unusual, then public health says, what is going on in this environment and what do we need to do? And so my work has always bridged healthcare and public health and put them together. And so at the Institute, I became quite a generalist. So I would be dealing with, in one moment, diabetes and diabetes management. Another time we're looking at hypertension, HIV, PrEP, immunizations, vaccinations, really working on all of those conditions. I'll say, and I'm not sure if you're familiar, but Institute for Family Health is what's called a federally qualified health center. I don't know how many people are used to that word. So the Institute, like many other federally qualified health centers in the country, get federal funding to serve the medically underserved. And so that means they don't refuse anyone. So if patients don't have insurance, and a lot of those patients have no insurance at all, the Institute provides the care and the federal government reimburses them. And so as a result, most of the patients, not all, because I go to the Institute, but most of the patients are particularly poor or elderly, have multiple diseases or multiple comorbidities that they're experiencing. So not only was I merging public health and healthcare, but among a very vulnerable population. The Institute, as you probably know or may not know, but it's an entity, an umbrella. So it has 23 locations of care clinics. So it's in New York City and it's in Ulster County. And so it also allows you to get a sense of what's going on in different parts of New York, whether it's more rural or urban or, you know, how those, and there's very different outcomes depending on where the different parts of New York. It's really interesting. That's one FQHC, and it's an incredible experience that I had for many years. About 2 years ago, I transitioned to Alliance Chicago. And what's different about Alliance is that while the Institute is one FQHC, at Alliance Chicago, it's 70 across the entire country. So now the same kind of work of merging public health and healthcare and really understanding how to respond to this high-risk population, I'm now talking about 4 million people across the country. And so it just is an expansive opportunity. And what's really interesting about it is that then, because it was national at this point, since it's all over the country, I'm getting to sit at the table with CDC, Center for Disease Control, and NIH, and really understanding what do they want next? What are their concerns? Where do they think we should be going? One of the things I'm most excited about, and this is very new, CDC is recognizing for the first time the importance of building up local departments of health. This is one of their key priorities right now. And they're using their focus is this thing, and I always have to say it slowly because I fumble over the words, but data modernization is their focus. So what that's saying, and obviously this comes from COVID, is they want local public departments of public health to be able to be fed the necessary data and information in more real time so that they can react and respond. There should not be a delay, right? So local departments of health need to know what's happening out there. Some of this data is from health departments like primary care or hospitals, but some of it is like air quality data. And there's so many other places, sources of data that could be fed in. And so it's super exciting, this idea of knowing that CDC is finally paying attention to building up the infrastructure of local health departments, and they're putting a lot of money into that, as well as expanding the usual sources of care, you know, improving how we respond to diabetes and hypertension and other chronic diseases, immunizations, et cetera. So this is a really special time for local departments of health that are pretty exciting. So I guess I'll just sort of close this in by saying that I have a diverse background in the kinds of training I've had and work experience I've had. And I feel like they all pull together to the complexity of the position of director of health. So, let me just add, because I also forgot this part, that while I'm at Alliance, I have a department that I'm leading. So I'm got administrative and managerial skills. I'm dealing with budget, staffing, hiring, firing, allocations. About a year and a half ago, the chief research officer, who's in the executive level, stepped away or resigned from her position. And so I had to move into also serving on the executive level. So that means really thinking about the strategies for the entire department and for the organization. I also had to think about staffing and how staff feel. You know, there's a lot of burnout in health. You just heard how hard it is to get even social workers to do these programs. And so having to really support the staff that are in my organization to feel good about their work, it's just interesting. I had this one 20-year-old who, this is her first job. She went from college to graduate school and then had this job. And when I first started, I was checking in with them, and she said to me, she was so overwhelmed.
and stressed out. And she said, I guess I didn't realize that in the real world, you're really overwhelmed at work. And I was like, no, that's not true. You're not supposed to be overwhelmed. You might have times you're working really hard and moments will be, but you're not supposed to feel overwhelmed all the time. And what can we do to fix this and change this? And I think this is important and relevant because in departments of health, you want the staff to feel good about what they're doing. They want them to feel empowered. You don't want them feeling overwhelmed or burnt out. So back to what I was saying, the complexity of this job, I feel like I bring all of the different layers of the complexity. So you want a public health director who understands the health environment and the public health environment that exists right now. What are the barriers and also what are the directions and possibilities? I can bring that to the table. You're going to want a public health director that has strong administrative skills, who knows how to write a resolution and knows how to do budgets and knows how to manage staffing and allocations. And I can bring that to the table. And you should have a public health director who knows Ulster County, and not just the people who live in Ulster County, but the web of government and nonprofit organizations that work together to support all of the people here. And I bring that to the table. And so because of all that, I'm extremely excited about this opportunity to be able to take everything I've been doing for 30 years from the time that I started. Did anyone actually go to high school here about 30 years ago?
30 years ago.
You did? Do you remember Youth in Action, the HIV prevention program?
Vaguely.
All right. I created that and did it in all. That's how I started my public health, is this HIV prevention in all of the high schools in Ulster County when I was in my 20s. And like that pulls it all together, this the capacity to just really provide this service. And so I'm really excited about this. There's so much opportunity. I think I gave you all like a list of all of these grants of projects and programs that we could be doing here in Ulster County. And I'll just stop now and see if you've got any questions for me.
Legislator McCullough, followed by concern.
One question. Let's say there's a disease out there.
There are.
Let's say there's one maybe we haven't seen yet. Mm-hmm. And you can treat it either with medicine or naturally upon your study. You're not opposed to the natural remedy, are you?
So I'll just again clarify that I'm a public health professional. I'm not a healthcare provider, so I don't treat an individual's disease. In terms of the messaging that you would give to individuals on how to take care of themselves, that this is where guidance comes from CDC on really the appropriate ways to keep yourself safe and healthy. It varies on the disease on the best way to keep yourself safe and healthy, so it really would be dependent on it.
I only ask because there's some things out there that could be treated with meds or naturally. So I was just curious. So.
Yeah. If you want to know personally for me, we can talk about another time out of here because that's about healthcare delivery, not public health. But yeah, I would just say that it would all depend on the guidance given the disease because they're all very, very different. Transmission is different.
Legislator Kitchen.
Maybe discuss. I had to leave the room for a minute. So you're currently working with a group called Alliance out of Chicago. Will you continue to do your work with them and be employed by them if you take this job as the county public health director?
No, absolutely not. It would be impossible.
Will you have any other employment besides the county of Ulster if you take this position?
No. I have the appointment at Mount Sinai. It's not paid, and I'm perfectly willing if it's not appropriate for me to keep that appointment. I think it's helpful for the county to keep that appointment, but I don't need to. But no, I would have no other paid position.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Legislator Hewitt. Other questions?
Is it from the county executive teams or anything that you wanted to add?
Yes, since Stephanie Turco is here, I would love to give her the opportunity to introduce herself and first, like broadly, the role of the Board of Health, because I don't know how many of you all are actually familiar with what the Board of Health is and what its role is, and then also speak to the role that the board has in the process.
You want me to speak to it, or you?
If you could,
yeah. Yeah, sure.
So I don't know most of you, but I am the president and CEO at Gateway. A lot of you know Gateway in the community, right? We're a leading human service organization, do lots of stuff with people with disabilities. And this is a volunteer board that I've been on for 5 years, and I've been a chairman for about a year and a half. Joanna asked me if I would be part of the interview process. I interviewed with Dr. Karina, and I don't know if there was anybody else on. We interviewed three candidates. They were all really different and good, but frankly, from the chairman's perspective, the thing that I was most concerned about was, and I would have given you a different answer in 2019, right? But in 2024, as the chairman, what I'm most concerned about is how are we prepared for the next pandemic? Because I was on the Board of Health through the pandemic, and it was a yeoman's job that was done by that staff. And definitely, from my point of view, in the reports that we got every month, that staff worked tirelessly and absolutely saved lives. So for me, it was having someone in this position that really could, you know, keep the people of this county safe. If and when the next thing happens, we need somebody who really has expertise in disease management epidemiology. And so, from, you know, Eve was my number one candidate. We really don't know each other, but absolutely through the three interviews, because not only is she local and she understands the community, but also her deep background in epidemiology, which I don't know anything about, right? I believe will help keep the citizens of the county safe. Are there any questions for, you know, how the board works or who's on it or nothing from you?
Are you signaling the ad? Do you want me to start this
meeting?
No, you said no.
I'm used to it.
Did Dr. Carol Smith interview with you? Did she apply for the position?
Not that I'm aware of.
All right, thank you.
Any other, yep, Deputy Secretary?
Just expand on that since we're all here and just take the opportunity to explained, like, the Board of Health operates very independently. They meet with the health department once a month, and they serve in an advisory capacity. So the leadership of the health department comes to the Board of Health, gives them various updates on medical examiner fatalities during the pandemic, how those trends were going, TUPA violations, the stings that happened with the vapes. So they really have a command of what the department does on a day-to-day basis. So I'm just really thankful to Stephanie and to Dr. Karina for being willing to take the time to be part of that interview process and to give their frank feedback.
Yeah. I mean, I would add on to that and say that you know, we're a board, I guess, just like the legislature, that's made up of citizens that are interested in, you know, doing, you know, taking care of our community and you know, being responsible for the people, for ourselves, our families, our neighbors. And to that end, you know, there are times when we don't understand something. We certainly don't have expertise in this world. And the department's always been really responsive in giving us information, having people come and present to us. And I think it deepens our understanding of, you know, we feel like we're, you know, responsible to the community that we live in to, you know, understand what's happening here in terms of public health.
Thank you. All right. Any questions, Legislator Hewitt?
I'm wondering if the health department analyzes Ulster County burnout and if they're involved in the overworking of county employees. Was that this department?
You know, I haven't heard anything about that.
Yeah. No, they don't. They don't analyze that.
What do you think about it?
I mean, from our office's perspective, we're always trying to come up with different ways. And actually, Jamie's here, who's in charge of personnel, of improving retention, engagement, recruitment, and, you know, we're constantly working on those. One of the reasons that we're excited about Dr. Walter is that specifically burnout in public health is an acute problem right now. And I think So, you know, the staff have been doing a great job, but Tim Rose has been the acting director and environmental health director for about 5 months now. We had a lot of vacancies in the patient services unit. We have vacancies in environmental health. So we really are looking for somebody to take a strong role in leadership, looking at the department, figuring out what resources they need, so, you know, advocating for them and making sure that we're giving that support that they need.
And building on that, working with our personnel department to make sure that we're always being cognizant, working with our department heads to understand what's happening within the department, especially as you look going through a pandemic. You know, that time was extremely difficult for the Department of Health. We see it within other departments as well. Corrections, we all know all too well. So we monitor that very closely, and we work with our Department of Personnel to really make sure that we're listening and working with the employees to make sure we're addressing all the concerns that we can.
Other questions? Yep, Legislative Hewitt.
I have a question for Dr. Walter. Do you know that I'm wary of big pharma and huge profits that they made during the pandemic? Also, the Hippocratic Oath of first doing no harm is difficult when for-profits first have to make a profit. Are you concerned about Optum and pharmaceutical insurance companies buying out medical companies like CareMount, and how much money is now at the top?
Well, you know, I would be hesitant to get political, but I will say I'm all for universal health care personally. You know, I think that it is very important that we are careful and sensitive to how the health dollars are used. It's a challenge. CDC made some major changes this year on how they were funding programs, and so I think that in general, we always have to be very thoughtful about how the government is spending its money on healthcare.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Any discussion? Okay, if there's no further questions, no further discussion, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 523. Moved by Legislator Collins, second by Legislator Harmon. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And we've got three opposed, and however many the rest, and the motion passes.
And that's nothing personal against you, Ms. Walter.
Doctor.
About a process that
is. Doctor.
All right, we're going to move on to the next resolution. Resolution 524, confirming a reappointment of a member to the Ulster County Board of Health. Is there any commentary or discussion? I probably could have blocked this with the others. All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 524.
Moved
by Legislator Collins, second by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor? Any opposed? Okay. We did 525. We did 553. Now we're getting into legislative resolutions. Resolution 526, urging the Ulster County Executive to implement the membership recommendations of the Ulster County Comptroller for the Ulster County compliance. And on this one, I think we have a couple of sponsors here. So I don't know if Legislator Corcoran, I think you're, and Legislator Kitchen are both listed as sponsors. Does anyone want to speak to this? This is 526. This is the changes to the Comp Alliance, or Vice Chair Lopez, if you want to speak to it. I think this is, my understanding is this is recommending, well, it's what it says in the title, basically. That's as concise as an overview as you can have. I don't know if this is controversy. Does the county executives team have any feedback on this? Yep, go ahead. Happy to give Capuana.
Committee. The Corporate Compliance Committee is chaired by Tom Gibney, who was here earlier. Tom does a quarterly presentation and a monthly presentation to the Clerk of the Legislature and the Chairman of the Legislature. During that time, they're presented with the information that's going on through the Corporate Compliance Committee. At this time, again, this is urging County Executive to implement recommendations that came out of the Corporate Compliance Audit. I will say that the Corporate Compliance Committee is very well structured. We look at everything that's going on within the Corporate Compliance Plan. You do approve the Corporate Compliance Plan also as well. So that is what I love.
Any questions, comments? Okay. Yep, Legislator Harmon.
Thank you. If I would love to hear from the sponsors what what this does that isn't already being done.
Just another check and balance.
Okay. What is the check and balance?
Well, came from the controller's office. She has conversations with legislator Kovacs. Kovacs brought it back to the caucus and discussed on her concerns. We're just voicing her concerns through the resolutions.
I'll just share personally.
Yeah, I'm inclined to support this, to bring it to the floor. If there's an issue, I'm sure the county executive's team will be specific about that issue. I didn't hear a specific issue with this.
I think it's more of a legislative council concern issue with having a legislative member on a shared compliance committee that would potentially go into executive session to discuss personnel matters that really do not fall within the purview of the legislature.
Mm.
But I would leave that to
Council Verrucci, do you want to?
I'll look into it.
Okay. I personally am eager for an opportunity to partner with our colleagues across the aisle. I'm inclined to support this tonight. Chair Criswell.
I'd actually really love to hear directly from the comptroller on this rather than it feels a little bit like we're doing this because the comptroller said we should. I'd rather hear the comptroller directly state why this is important. I'm not necessarily opposed. I'm not necessarily for, but I feel like until I actually hear from her. So I actually would consider postponing it until we can invite the comptroller to have a conversation with us about why we're important.
Let's see, what other committees is this going to go in front of? Is this only going to be in this committee? Okay. How do you...
I don't have an issue with that. Honestly, I didn't even know that I was on there. Otherwise, I would have brought something to the table. But no, this is something that we'll have to discuss.
Let the record show you. That's what time I spoke.
That's fair. I want to support you.
I'll even make motions
before. Yeah, I'll second.
Great. All right, so there's a motion and a second on the table to postpone this 1 month. Any discussion on the postponement? So during that time, council will determine if there are any issues, and then I would, Michael, I would love it if you could invite Comptroller Gallagher to our next meeting so that she could be here for this conversation.
That's what we're talking about in postponement.
Yeah, we're in discussion on the postponement right now because there's a motion on the table, and I want to say those things in discussion. Okay. Any further discussion on the postponement? Okay, then I'm going
to
call
it. We'd like to say we're postponing this till our next meeting.
Till our next meeting, correct.
I just want to postpone it definitely. I'd like to know what's going on, I guess. What the topic is and what's serving.
Yes, just till next meeting.
Transparent.
Excellent. All right, so then I will call the question on the postponement. All those in favor of postponing 1 month?
All right.
Any opposed? All right, cool. And now we are on to our last resolution, Resolution 356, establishing a policy requiring consideration of the use of hemp insulation in certain Ulster County capital construction projects. This is a resolution that Legislator Hewitt introduced. It was referred to this committee. There are some implications for the Housing Action Plan, which is the purview of this committee. And I also understand there have been some good conversations between the executive branch and Legislator Hewitt, and we're in a good place on this, is my understanding. And I'll hand it over to Legislator Hewitt to provide any further background.
Great, thank you. It was unanimously out of Energy and Environment and Sustainability. It was unanimous out of Public Works. And I understand the concerns of anything that would hold up affordable housing can be an issue. So I have been postponing it for 3 or 4 months to make sure that we refine it and fine-tune it in a way that everyone can agree to. So I think that the county executive is still concerned about holding up affordable housing, but after I spoke to multiple contractors and carpenters, they're excited about the idea of considering hemp insulation. It won't stop anything. And even one of the projects that we recently appropriated $2 million to, they said, we're excited by that opportunity. So I don't believe it would hold up affordable housing because it's only a consideration of the use. I believe it's a light lift for contractors, both ours in the county, because it's requiring it for capital projects or retrofits that the county does. And in all the research and all the backup we have, it's feasible. It's possible to buy, and it may be too expensive. It may be too far from here. So this is trying to build demand for a local product that can be grown on local farms, help our farmers, help local agriculture.
and we may not be able to get it for a little while for an affordable rate. But the contractors can say, we can't afford it. It comes from Canada, and we don't want to ship in something that we can get from Dutchess County. We also want to inspire a cottage industry with a resolution like this by having small-scale farmers be able to produce fibers, herd is for animal bedding, and create realistic short-term products that can be bought locally. Because in the future, we could be making paper, cardboard, fuel, plastics, bioplastics, and we're not ready for that. So this is taking a step for something we're ready for. I believe it will also create resilience in times of crisis, because during the pandemic, we saw we were running out of food within 2 weeks. We can run out of building supplies. And if we build a cottage industry, we can rely on our local farmers for this plant. It's also finally an opportunity to innovate as a county, and also to support innovators in our county.
I want to applaud Legislator Hewitt for his stick-to-itis with this, for one thing, and also your flexibility. I've watched through the process how we've had good, strong conversations about what's possible, what would be something that would could possibly hinder progress, and I think that you've been very good and very clear flexible with that whole process. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, but I'll just share, you know, I had some concerns about this when I heard it affected the Housing Action Plan. I spoke with the county executive, and I feel a lot better about it now. My understanding is it can be implemented as part of the application process for Housing Action Plan, where they can basically check off what, you know, what they considered and, or, you know, what the conclusion was on that. And I'm comfortable with that, so I'm happy that the county executive is confident in implementing it in a way that's not going to stand in the way of housing. Great. Yep.
I told Jen I would like to work together on publicity around this and a press release, and come up with an idea like Ulster County includes hemp insulation in affordable homes, because we already got state attention. NYSAC published the article that was in the Freeman. State people are talking about how we're innovators already. So thank you very much.
Excellent. All right. Legislator McCullough, and then Kitchen.
I just want to say I'm in support of this, and we support one another. Great idea. And for me, it didn't say you have to. It said consideration. That's good enough for me.
Yeah. I just added as a co-sponsor. Thank you.
Legislator Kitchen?
The wording is a little bit confusing because it says requiring consideration. And there's a lot of different, in my field, there's a lot of different insulation products out there, very good insulation projects. So what does this actually do? Does it have teeth? I mean, what is it? What does the resolution do? I mean, is it hemp insulation allowed now?
Yes, it is. But it's helping us prioritize it because it's such a feasible product to grow locally. And it's going to help us have something that isn't toxic. Expanding foam puts out a lot of carbon into the atmosphere.
Right.
The fiberglass is toxic.
So what does the resolution do? If it doesn't require it, it requires that you consider it?
Yes, and I was worried when we were thinking about not requiring it for things that we fund, like affordable housing, it would take all the teeth out of it.
Right. The word require always scares me coming out of government.
Yeah.
Chair Criswell.
We've actually had similar resolutions that have passed requiring consideration of other things. Mm-hmm. Recently, we had one requiring consideration of creating a
edible landscape.
Edible landscape. Thank you. When
what landscape?
Edibles. So
like marijuana edibles?
No.
Strawberries, apples.
Edible products like
that. All right.
Food growth. So what it does is it just requires a consideration of that option, and that's exactly what this would be doing.
There's no penalty if they don't go with that product. There's no.
Okay.
Correct. All right. Any other questions, comments, discussion? If there is no questions, comments, or discussion further, I will ask for a motion to adopt Resolution 356. Moved by Legislator Corcoran, seconded by Vice Chair Lopez. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. That passes. Thank you, everybody. That is our last resolution. One programming note, the county executive announced their budget That means that we are going to be hearing from all of the department heads about their budgets. We are going to have a budget discussion on Thursday, November 7th at 3:30. So it's a different time, slightly different time. And I just want to put this on everybody's radar. We're going to hear from all the department heads. They're going to line up. They're going to tell us all their budgets. And it's going to be at a slightly earlier starting time. All right.
To that, that will also cause a cancellation of the housing subcommittee that would be on the same day. They don't want to work.
Okay. I had asked them to push it. I asked them to start it. I wasn't sure how long those meetings were running. And so they had initially proposed 3 o'clock for this. And I said, can you do it at 3:30 so that the theory of the housing action, the housing subcommittee.
It chose to have the meeting.
Okay.
It's going to be a long meeting anyway.
That's fine. Good. Okay, cool. I was worried that this was you hearing about for the first right now.
No.
That's good. Okay, wonderful. All right. Cool. So we don't have any new business. We don't have any old business. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. All right. Moved by Legislator Kitchen. Seconded by Legislator Harmon. All those in favor? All right. All those.